So today is the second episode of the Brain Injury Association's Maryland's Lunch and Learn. And today's episode will be on brain injury and mental health. And so for those who may not know that the Brain Injury Association is a nonprofit organization and that it started 40 years ago. We're about to turn 40 this year. And it was started by parents who just needed to find that community of individuals who have sustained a brain injury. And it was just kind of hard to find that community here in Maryland. So they started the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. And the mission here at the Brain Injury Association of Maryland is to bring health, hope, and healing to thousands of Marylanders who are living with brain injuries, their family, and professionals who serve them. But before we get into today's presentation, let me introduce myself. So a little bit about me. My name is Nadja Britton. I am one of the support service case managers for the Brain Injury Waiver in Maryland, and I am the health educator for the Brain Injury Association of Maryland. A little bit about my history. I was a psychiatric rehabilitation program mobile caseworker, so I do have a little history working in this the mental health industry. But I do want to put this disclaimer out that I am not a licensed medical professional or a licensed medical health professional. So this is information that we have gathered. Or I have gathered here to present to you and hopefully to spread the awareness and about brain injury and mental health. So for today's presentation, I do have some learning objectives I hope you're able to achieve today. One, understanding have gaining an understanding of traumatic brain injury. I might be referencing our first episode of the Lunch and Learn webinar, and we did in that webinar or presentation talk about, brain injury, traumatic, non-traumatic. But today I'm going to be just kind of focusing on the traumatic brain injuries. Then I'm going to talk about the relationship between brain injury and mental health, and seeing, trying to understand that second diagnosis, the psychiatric disorder, in combination with the brain injury, what those additional barriers might that might be added, that might complicate you getting treatment or finding treatment, and then possibly finding some, talking about some accommodations, strategies, and resources, especially when someone might be going in or might be having a crisis event. So for today's presentation, here's the outline. I'm going to be doing an overview. So I'm going to be talking about traumatic brain injury. Then I'm going to be talking about the mechanisms of a brain injury, or the traumatic brain injury fingerprint. Then I will briefly be going into the changes after a traumatic brain injury, then having a brief overview of mental health, then understanding the link between TBI or brain injury and mental health, then strategies to implement and some resources. So, like I said earlier, this is an interactive webinar. So, we have some poll questions, and I have my colleague on this webinar, and hopefully, she'll be able to pull up the quote poll so you guys can just select the option. So, the first question is, how many mechanisms of a traumatic brain injury are there? So, how many do you think they are there? So, this is just an educated guess. So let's see if we're able to get that poll coming up. Do you guys see the poll? Okay, there you go. I get a result. Okay, a few more people who haven't responded. Let's see. About 5 seconds, I'll be closing the poll. All right, I'm going to end it now. Okay. So you guys should be seeing the results. We have about one person voted three, six people voted four, one person voted two, one person voted six. So the person who voted two, you are correct. So there are two mechanisms that are involved with traumatic brain injury. There is traumatic impact and traumatic intertropical forces, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But first, an overview, a brief overview or a review for some people about a traumatic brain injury and what that is. So a traumatic brain injury is defined as an insult to the brain that is caused by external physical forces. And some examples are those are falls, car crashes, sport injuries, assaults. So let's get into this traumatic impact, the first mechanism. And it is defined as being struck by or against of how, so the either the head or neck area is being struck by or against. And then the traumatic impact is further categorized into two categories, which are shown on the screen, close injury. And this is an injury to the brain resulting in lacerations or contusions. Oh, sorry, this just popped up on my screen. Everything going okay? Okay, sorry about that. So yeah, so we have a close injury, so that's resulting in lacerations or contusions to the brain, and then there's an open injury, so that means that there's a breach in the skull. So, and this could be a breach of the meninges. So an example of a close injury, those are like the ones that I mentioned before. So the falls, the car accidents, there could be blast related. This is more common for individuals who are mostly seen with veterans. And then like sports injuries, and then some examples of open injuries, those could be gunshot, stabbing. So those are the more common ones. But in depending on the severity of the injury, such as or the incident, such as a fall, car crash, those could become open injuries as well. So traumatic intertial, and so this is the an impact that doesn't cause injury to the brain, but is a result of intertial force. So that's the acceleration and deceleration force of caused by external causes. So here, let's see. Hopefully, you guys can see this video. And this is an example of intertial force and an example of an intertial force or a traumatic intertial injury is a Coupe-Contrecoupe injury. And the Coupe-Contrecoupe injury is actually is two injuries in one. So the coupe injury is defined as an moving object impacting a stationary head, and the contrecoupe injury is classified as the moving head striking a stationary object. So an example of this is a being rear-ended in a car. So here, this is you or the car, and you're getting rear-ended. And so when you get rear-ended, you're forced forward. And when that happens, hopefully you're wearing your seatbelt. So something's stopping you, possibly. So, like I said, your seatbelt, maybe the steering wheel, or the airbag. And so you are stationary in your car, or your head was stationary in your car, and with you being rear-ended, that forces you to go forward, which would make the coupe injury. And then with that object, whether that's your seatbelt, The airbag, it stops you and forces you back. And then your head is becomes the moving object. And then you hit your head on the headrest, and that would be the contra coup injury. And so with that movement of the brain, as you saw in the video, and that video, let me go back, actually, I feel like it's a good representation of the consistency of your brain. So it's almost like jello or cooked cauliflower. So it's very soft. And so when this force is being placed upon your brain and your skull, the bottom half of your skull have these very pointy ridges or bone ridges, and this could cause some more or can cause the injury. And it's these bone ridges are mostly found in your frontal and temporal lobe. So this probably give you a hint, but which lobes are critical in controlling emotion and behavior? Let's see if this poll will come up. Okay, hopefully you guys see this poll. So you have frontal or occipital lobe, your frontal or precipital lobe, or your frontal or temporal lobe. Okay, I'm about to close it. Okay. So we had about two people doing the frontal and occipital, one person frontal and precipital. Or parietal, I don't know why I said that, parietal lobe, or your frontal, and then we have about seven people doing frontal and temporal lobe. Just share. And so if you picked your frontal and temporal lobe, you are correct. And these two lobes are really critical in involving and managing your behavior and emotion. And it's been coined as these are very prone to damage, as mentioned in the previous slide with the bone ridges and where they are located. It's been coined when these two lobes are injured, the fingerprint of traumatic brain injury. So briefly to go over the lobes, this again might be a review for some people who attended the first episode. So the frontal lobe is your biggest lobe. It's located right behind your forehead, and it's the biggest function that it helps you with is your executive function skills. And that's your working memory, your flexible thinking, self-control, helps you plan and move around in your environment. So it helps you with your problem solving, your judgment. I kind of think of it as your parent's lobe, because it helps you so much throughout your day. And then we have your temporal lobe. So your temporal lobe helps with your auditory and memory, helps you restoring your short-term and long-term memory. And there has been study that with the activity and the temporal lobe and aggression, that it could it helps with that controlling your aggression as well. All right, so I have another poll question for you guys. Let's see if I can pull it up for you guys. So this question, a brain injury can cause the following complication: physical, cognitive, emotional, or all of the above. Okay, I'm going to end it. Let me share the results. Everybody said all of the above, and everybody is correct. So So briefly to talk about some of these changes that happen after a brain injury, we have some common physical changes. One that's not on the screen, like fatigue. Another one that's on the screen, your speech could be slowed or slurred. Your motor skills, so your balance, your coordination. There could be a change in with your muscle strength and tone. Some cognitive changes, your executive functioning skills. So that working memory, the way you're going to move throughout your environment, the way you're going to have that flexible thinking, that planning, that self-control, that stopping mechanism. And then confabulation, some people might put it under cognitive changes, some people might put it under behavioral, but I'll talk about it here. So the confabulation is a memory disorder that is usually strongly associated with individuals who sustained a brain injury. And it's during that first initial rehab stage that there's some gaps in their memory. In order to fill in those gaps, the individual might have made up stories. And this can come off as being as a lie, but again, it's just a way that someone's able to fill in the gaps of their memory. And then some behavioral changes. We have emotional liability. So this is like a severe mood swing. And what makes it different from a regular mood swing is the severity of it. So with someone who has this emotional liability, they could be laughing one minute and literally the next second they could be crying. And then the aggression. So it's very common for someone who have sustained a brain injury. It's been reported that family members that their loved ones who sustained a brain injury has a short fuse. And again, it's that stopping mechanism. If they're put, they might be in an environment that caused them stress before the brain injury, but yet they had that executive functions skill, that stopping mechanism, that self-control to stop them from like acting on their aggression or, having that short fuse. But after that brain injury, it's no longer there or it's damaged. And so they really act on that aggression. Okay, so mental health. Let me pull up the poll. Okay, so mental health. One's mental health can affect which of the following: how one acts, how one feels, how one thinks, or all of the above. Okay. Right, I'm gonna end. Share. Everybody picked all of the above, and everyone's right. So, your mental health includes our emotion, our psychology, our social well-being. It affects how we think, feel, and act. And it determines how we handle stress, relate to others, and make these healthy choices. And sometimes, when someone is trying to cope or deal with these changes after a brain injury, it can take a toll on one's mental health. And there could be a diagnosis of a psychiatric disorder. So, its definition of a psychiatric disorder or mental health disorder is a health condition that involves a change in one's emotions, thinking, and behavior, and or behavior, and it can be a combination of all these things, and it can be associated with distress and problems functioning or integrating back into one's life before the injury. So, I have another poll question. Stop sharing. Can a TBI cause a psychiatric disorder? Okay, gonna end the poll. So we had about eight people pick true and right, and one person pick false. Okay. And the answer is initially it's going to be hard to tell. It's because it's kind of hard to disentangle like whether what one's observing those changes in your emotions and behaviors, and is that a sign or a change after the brain injury, or is this a true sign and symptom of a psychiatric disorder? And that's because a lot of the sign and symptoms of a psychiatric disorder or the changes that happen after a brain injury, they kind of overlap. So that T, change in appetite, weight loss and gain. These are just to name a few. I'll be going into some of the signs and symptoms of a psychiatric disorder later on. But however, there have been studies that says that due to the physical changes after a brain injury, there is a strong association of certain psychiatric disorders being diagnosed after a brain injury. So before we get into those common psychiatric disorders there, I do want to take a moment and talk about dual diagnosis. So a dual diagnosis of one, this is the definition, a disease process of a symptom in addition to a set of symptoms, including behaviors which are or resemble a symptom of a known psychiatric disorder. And so this in today's presentation, when I talk about dual diagnosis and talking about a brain injury and a psychiatric disorder, not really pinpointing which psychiatric disorder, but just a psychiatric disorder in general. When someone has been diagnosed with a dual diagnosis, this can add some additional stressors and can come make some or develop some complicated issues. And this could relate to one's work if they're out in the community, and find can also which can also lead to financial stressors and responsibilities. And even the stressors of daily life can add additional complications. So now, talking about some common psychiatric disorders following a TBI. So on the screen, I have depressive episode, manic episode, schizophrenia. I have some slides where I'll go further into these, but these are just some of the common psychiatric disorders. It's not all of them, just some of them. But I think I have, yep, I have another poll question. So before I go more into those psychiatric disorders common after a brain injury, I do have this question. Having a dual diagnosis, TBI and psychiatric disorder, does not amplify or complicate the symptom of one or both of the diagnoses. So false would mean that it does complicate, true would mean that they don't. Okay, let me share the results. So we have three people who said true, and then seven people who said false. So now I'm going to be talking about the psychiatric disorders, and you can see how with the presence of a brain injury, it might present differently, or could how it could influence one another in a sense. So with major depressive episode, the textbook definition is this diagnosis is result and a characteristic by at least 2 weeks of experienced loss of interest or depression mood with at least 4 additional symptoms. And some of the symptoms are change in appetite, weight loss or gain, decreased energy, feeling of worthlessness, suicidal ideation. Depression and brain injury, there is a likelihood of development or the diagnosis of depression. There has been studies that shows that the likelihood of someone developing or being diagnosed with depression is 4.3%, much higher than the general population within 7.5 years of their diagnosis. And there has been studies that also, depending on the injury of the brain injury, so meaning which lobe or that the brain injury is, could also increase the likelihood of the diagnosis. One study stated that the left prefrontal gray matter, the activity in that gray matter could, there could be a great association there. Manic episode here, this is where we can kind of see how a brain injury could change or affect the psychiatric disorder. So with a manic episode, it's a period of at least 1 week where the individual has a noticeably elevated, expansive or irritable mood and with at least 3 symptoms. This is extreme amplified self-esteem, decreased desire for sleep, there's grandiose ideas, they're distracted easily, they're involved in activities with high possible for consequences. So when someone who has a brain injury and might be exhibiting a manic episode, it might be presented a little differently. There's less of that euphoria attitude that comes that is usually associated with a manic episode, and there's more aggression, more irritability, but there are also some common symptoms like decrease of sleep. Schizophrenia. So in this disorder, lasts at least 6 months and characterized by a minimum of 1 month of symptoms, which can include delusion, hallucination, and incoherent speech, catatonia, and elevations. and then with schizophrenia and brain injury, there have been shown that there's more significant problems that with the dual diagnosis, such as social relationship and the capacity for independence. And there has been a study that's shown that the prevalence of schizophrenia increases 2 to 3-fold in the span of 10 to 20 years post-injury or post brain injury. So another psychiatric disorder or something that's common with brain injury is anxiety. So there's general anxiety disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. How they differ is with general anxiety disorder, there's the often described as feeling fear or worried. And this can present as being fatigue, irritable, muscle tension, restlessness, decreased concentration, and change of sleep. With post-traumatic disorder or PTSD or PTS, depending on who you're talking to, some of similar signs and symptoms, but what differs between the two is it follows a traumatic event, and the individual experience the traumatic traumatic event, or they might have flashbacks. And just so this is clear, the traumatic event is traumatic to them, what they define as a traumatic event. So that could be a fall. So it doesn't have to be what you define as traumatic. I just wanted to point that out. And with the dual diagnosis, it can create some barriers for to getting or accessing rehabilitation and treatment, or just if the person is receiving treatment, it could create barriers within the treatment, such as with their behavior, or if they are trying to access rehabilitation or treatment, they may have trouble availing their diagnosis of the brain injury, especially in talk therapy with maybe that cognition. And if they're in these types of treatments and are not being able to avail the brain injury and being diagnosed some psychiatric medication, which could exacerbate some of these changes, the cognitive or behavioral changes after a brain injury, and which could increase someone's agitation, confusion, and may increase combative behavior or combative aggression, which could then cause the individual to go into a crisis event. So I will talk about some possible ways for intervention for that, for crisis events. But first, this should be kind of a hint for this question. So when someone has a dual diagnosis and exhibiting escalated behavior, there's nothing that can be done. Okay, all right, let's stop that one. Sorry about that. So everybody press selected false, which is true. That's correct, I should say. So so before getting into some possible strategies when dealing with an individual who may be experiencing a crisis event, I would first want to talk about the approach to treatment. So, because I feel like someone might be seeing someone who's exhibiting a crisis event and might just try to seek some treatments or resources for the behavioral, but there has been studies that you want to kind of follow this stability triangle. And so I didn't have an actual triangle, but I kind of put the components in a triangle and how you want to approach it. So the first one you want to do is to address them medically or their somatic health. So you want to make sure that they're medically stable, because there could be multiple factors such as their pain, their sleep, maybe they're having insufficient or inappropriate medication or substance in their system that could affect how they're interacting with their environment. And sometimes if you address them medically, it could help stabilize them and help them get out of this crisis. So first you want to make sure that their medics look at their somatic health and make sure they're medically stable. Then you want to look at their behavior and see what you can be could be done to get them behaviorally stable. And so this usually involves a team, such as a neuropsychiatrist, a neuropsychologist, and you can also try to get a behavioral analyst into this team. This way you can assess and identify the behaviors, and then you can create a treatment plan to best address these behaviors and how the individual could cope with the stressors that might be the onset of these stressors. And then a stable activity plan. So this is really just establishing the individual's ability, their interest, and their support, and kind of creating this plan to make sure to help them achieve a goal, and which would help them become, stay stable. And so when someone who is exhibiting behaviors or maybe going into a crisis event, you want to kind of want to come back to this approach to treatment and first address the medical and then go into the behavior, because sometimes, like I said, it could be their medical. An example could be maybe someone could be experiencing a UTI. So physically, like when you lay eyes on them, they may look physically fine, but if you do some tests, you might find out that they may have maybe suffering from a UTI. And once that is addressed, then they could they be returned to their stable. They become stable. So now I'm going to be going into tips for de-escalation when someone may be going through a crisis event. Some tips for de-escalation is active listening. So this looks like, this is usually paraphrasing and asking for clarification, orientation. You want to be very direct and explain everything that's going on in the situation and on what you're going to be doing next. Redirection, this is usually changing their attention and trying to de-stress or decrease the stress in the situation. And then setting limits, I feel like it's very similar to orientation. So you want to be clear in your expectation of the individual and talk about possible outcomes of their behavior, both positive and negative. And you want to always start with your positive. And then withdrawal of attention. So if there are off-task behaviors, you kind of want to withdraw them and try to redirect them. And then when in a situation where you're trying to de-escalate, you want to also remember your nonverbal communication. So you want to make sure that you have personal space. About 3 feet is a good safe space. This is just so you are protecting yourself because you don't know how the individual is going to react. But then also it's giving the individual kind of some space as well so they don't feel as threatened. Your body posture and movement. You also want to look at your facial expression and gaze. And then also you want to look at your tone, your volume, and cadence of speech. So some tips for effective interventions. So you want to, this is something that you always want to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Also, is you want to try to treat everyone with dignity, respect, and a mix of professionalism and warmth. So a way for doing this is to remind the individual that you're there to help them and help advocate for themselves. And then set occasion for effective intervention. So you want to make sure that you establish those boundaries, like I mentioned before. And then you want to stay calm, and this could be a very stressful event. And so you kind of, there is the saying that in this stressful event, sometimes the best thing to do is nothing at first, because sometimes when you react too quickly, it's just off of emotions. And you want to be willing to evaluate your own interaction skills, because when things get escalated, the only thing you can really do is change what you're doing. And also sometimes you might not even really realize that the way you're talking or what you're saying to the individual could be what's escalating the situation. So you want to make sure that you're there to support and educate them, and you want to try to avoid like the talking down and parenting type of talk. And then remember, don't take things personally, especially things don't happen immediately. And sometimes you want to make sure that you get them the right treatment, intervention, and that does take time. So I'm going to start closing up this presentation. But before I do that, I do want to say that there are some resources out there. These are just a few of them. First, the Brain Injury Association is a resource. Like I said earlier, we are a nonprofit organization, but we're also here to help find some resources for individuals in the community. So you can call us, we have a toll-free number, you can go to our website, or you can email us at info, so I-N-F-O at B-I-A-M-D, and we can help with finding some of those resources, like I mentioned earlier, like a neuropsychologist or neuropsychiatrist. And then we can also help with finding some possible solutions that might be adding those stressors into someone's life that may be causing them an increase in their behaviors. If you want some more additional information about psychiatric disorder, the American Psychological Association is a place to start. And then you could also contact us and we'll be able to help you as well. And then there's the Mental Health Association of Maryland is a good resource as well. And a lot of the de-escalation techniques, they will be able to help you. They do have some trainings like mental health first aid. And then if someone is really getting is in crisis and need an emergency help, you can always call the crisis team. And it's 988, I believe. The Brain Injury Association, we do try to spread awareness and have educational opportunities. So we do have some more upcoming webinars and may planning to do substance use, and then in June, aging safety. Then we have our Brain Injury Fundamental course, where it's more intensive. It takes what is talked about in the webinar and really dedicate more time in breaking down the techniques and ways that how to address the challenges when you're encountering an individual who may have sustained a brain injury. And then we do have opportunities where you can take some courses to become a certified brain injury specialist trainer. And that is it. I do want to say thank you for your time and participating in today's webinar. If you have any questions, I'll take some questions now. And yeah, let me stop sharing. Well, thank you. If you guys don't have any questions right now, that's perfectly fine. Or if you have some suggestions, when you exit out of today's webinar, it should take you to an evaluation sheet. So you can put some of your feedback there. Following this webinar, I will be sending out an email. It will be coming through Constant Contact, but if you press reply, I will be getting it. And you can just email me back if you have any questions on that. That will be a great time. Sorry, got distracted. That will be where you can also ask your questions as well. I believe my coworker is putting in the chat. I mentioned that the Brain Injury Association is turning 40 this year, and we are celebrating this May 7th, the Sunday, May 7th. We're having a birthday bash, birthday party. All our members are invited. If you're not a member, it's really easy. I believe my coworker is putting a link on how you can become a member in the chat. And and you'll be able to come to our party free. If you don't want to become a member, that's perfectly fine. You can still come, but you'll have to pay. Okay. I'd love to hear more about becoming a certified brain injury specialist training and what it entails, please. Okay. So Catrice, I hope that I'm saying that right. And I think you came from Instagram, so I'm really happy to see you. Again, just email when I send out the email later today, just reply back and I'll give you that information if you want to get some more information about becoming a certified brain injury specialist trainer. So yes. And if you don't get the email, you can just message on Instagram. I'm the one who's replying, and I'll get you that information too. Any other questions? Okay. All right. Again, thank you for all the supportive words and please, oh, and if you guys want your CEUs, you've got to fill out that evaluation. Okay, so that's how you will get your CEUs if you want your continuing education units.
Naja, there is a question in the chat.
More information on the fundamental course. Oh, okay. So yeah, I can give you so. The fundamental course is a 12, I believe it's a 12-hour course. I don't teach that course, my supervisor does, and I can see if there's an upcoming course or an upcoming schedule coming up on that. And again, it's really tailored towards people who do work with individuals who sustain a brain injury, and it kind of goes over the overview of a brain injury. So the things that I talked about in the presentation, it's kind of giving you more time to go over that material and scenarios and how to successfully work with individuals with brain injury. But again, like I said, if you respond to the email, I'll definitely don't think that it's a robot, it's me. So you can reply to the email and I'll get you the information. So don't hesitate to reply to my emails through Constant Contact. Oh, no problem. Okay, I'll wait a few more minutes if there's any other questions. If not, we'll just end 10 minutes early. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for everyone who joined today. I really appreciate it. I hope you guys have a great day.